Hi, everyone. I'm Tanzina Vega, and this is The Takeaway. On Tuesday, President Trump attracted plenty of scrutiny for his comments about American Jews after being asked if the U.S. should reconsider its aid to Israel.
Where has the Democratic Party gone? Where have they gone where they're defending these two people over the state of Israel? And I think any Jewish people that vote for a Democrat, I think it shows either a total lack of knowledge or great disloyalty.
The president doubled down on the comment on Wednesday, telling reporters, quote, if you want to vote Democrat,
you're being very disloyal to Jewish people and you're being very disloyal to Israel.
The comments came after Israel banned Democratic House Representatives Rashida Tlaib and Ilhan Omar from entering the country, after President Trump tweeted that allowing the two to visit would, quote, show great weakness. He also accused the two of hating Israel and all Jewish people. While President Trump is attempting to win over Jewish voters by accusing the Democrats of anti-Semitism, using the language of disloyalty against Jews in itself is a stereotype that dates back centuries. Joining me now is Hasia Diner, a professor of American Jewish history at NYU. Hasia, thanks for being on The Takeaway.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
So, Jewish people have been called politically disloyal for centuries. The president is not the first one to use this, both in the United States and elsewhere. Why has this trope been so persistent?
The trope has been persistent in large measure as a reflection of historical realities. That is, Jews were, for the most part, always a people apart. That is, they lived in predominantly Christian societies or predominantly Muslim societies. They were sometimes the only non-Christians or non-Muslims living there. And despite the fact that in some of these places they had been there for centuries, they were viewed as not the indigenous or the real or the legitimate people of the place, France, Germany, Russia, whatever. They stuck out. And in that, they were, as the word is now, othered. And they were viewed also as people who were constantly on the move. And again, there's a grain of truth in that Jews were very much a migratory people. And when things got tough or when opportunities beckoned elsewhere, they migrated. And in a way, on top of that, they did live in a kind of transnational, diasporic collectivity, and that Jews in France and Jews in Morocco had a bond with each other. Jews in Spain, Jews in the Ottoman Empire had a bond with each other. And for many people who lived very locally, that seemed strange. In good times, it was not a problem. But when times got tough, when there were wars, when there was international conflict, when there were serious dips in the economy, then those people, okay, the ones who seemed to not really be part of this society, were not only very easy targets, but often accused of siding with that other hostile force. I mean, World War I was an incredible example of this, because the Jews of Central Europe who lived in that kind of complex parts of the Austro-Hungarian and the Tsarist Empire, when one side moves in, the Jews are accused of being collaborators with the other. When the other side moves in, no, Jews are the collaborators with the other enemy. And they were, for the most part, people who were just trying to stay alive and always accused of disloyalty.
So when we think about the history that you just laid out, how does that shape what the president said this week about American Jews being disloyal to Israel? And why would the president invoke loyalty to Israel in particular?
So I think this represented a new moment in time. I think historians, if there are still historians in the future, will look back at this as something truly sui generis. He was not, I think, as I heard the statement several times, he was not so much saying they were disloyal to the United States, but that they were disloyal to Israel. And as such, he's saying they're not good Jews, which causes me to think that what's going on is he's not really speaking to Jews. He's not trying to convince Jews to be more supportive of Israel. But I think he's speaking to his Christian fundamentalist base that has, for reasons that, again, are historically deep and dense and complicated, taken on the cause of Israel as part of their kind of eschatological end of the world, second coming kind of vision for the future, which is fundamental to their politics. In that context, he's weaponizing the status of Jews in the United States in a way that no president ever has. There's absolutely no parallel.
He's also said something I don't think any president has also said. And on Wednesday, President Trump thanked a noted conspiracy theorist on Twitter for saying that in Israel, the Jewish people love Trump, and I'm quoting here, quote, like he's the king of Israel. They love him like he's the second coming of God. These are the words of the conspiracy theorist. How do we make sense of that? I mean, this is unprecedented.
Extremely unprecedented. And in a sense, both phrases that you're quoting here are really loaded. And so first, the idea he's the king of Israel. Okay, so, I mean, this is really Christian language. And, Herod says that Jesus is, you know, the king of the Jews. That is totally directed at this Christian evangelical base, and the idea of the second coming, that's at the core of what the evangelicals are about, which is a kind of message that someday in the future, okay, all the Jews will be gathered in their homeland, and when that happens, there will be the second coming. Their support for Israel grows not out of a sense of Jews, like all other nations, deserve a homeland, just like the French deserve a homeland or the Italians deserve a homeland. But the Jews need a homeland because this prepares the ground for the second coming of Christ.
We did ask some of our Jewish listeners for their reactions to President Trump's statement from this week, and I want to play a clip of what one of them had to say and their reaction.
This is John Cooper calling from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, questioning our loyalty, et cetera. It's just a sign of his thin skin. We reject him consistently and overwhelmingly according to all available data. He thinks we should be grateful for these gifts to Netanyahu. He doesn't get that we care about his other horrible policies more than these gifts.
What are your thoughts on John's comment?
I think they're spot on also, because in making those statements, Trump is also addressing Jews. And he's saying essentially, remember, because the first part of Trump's statement was they're misinformed or they don't really know how important Israel as a kind of bastion of Jewish nationalism is for them. They don't know how bad Ilhan Omar and Rashida Tlaib are. They're misinformed. And I'm going to tell them because I know so much. And if you Jews really knew what was good for you as Jews, you would support me. Jews, I think in the last presidential election, were about 76% for Hillary, which is about what it's been for decades on a variety of issues that have nothing to do with Israel, a government that is involved in extending services to all people. Okay, to take care of the poor, to ease class tensions, a state which is neutral as much as that's possible on issues of race, religion, ethnicity, and that what should matter is the individual, and a state which attempts to maximize economic opportunity for all. Okay, I mean, that's what Jews have voted on.
President Trump and the Republican Party have particularly been singling out Muslim politicians like Rashida Tlaib and Ilhan Omar for their views on Israel. Is that new?
Well, the entry of Muslims as individuals, and in fact, the emergence of something of a Muslim voting bloc in the United States is a reflection of the great migrations starting with the 1970s, the changes in the immigration laws, which opened up the possibility of migrating from the lands which are made up of Muslims, and so that these communities are developing and they're becoming politically active and conscious, as all immigrants have always been. What's new is the degree to which this newly coalesced population is in existence, and how, I think certainly in the face of 9/11 and the I think tremendous Islamophobia in the United States, the fear that Islam, so-called radical Islam, is going to challenge basic American values, they are very easy targets. And that people like Trump do not realize, or they don't see, that Muslim voters and politicians like Ilhan Omar and Rashida Tlaib and so on are behaving just like all immigrant voting blocs have since really the beginning of the nation. And here are two individuals who have taken very, I think, bold steps and made themselves very prominent, understandably representing not just their constituencies, but certain values. And they are sitting ducks for people like Trump.
We've also seen some Jewish groups in the United States take very vocal stances against, for example, what's happening with children at the southern border, asking to close the camps, if you will, protesting against ICE raids. Could that also be playing into what we're seeing here?
I think Trump sees the one very large segment of the American Jewish population, including some who are themselves very supportive of Israel, but still opposing him on the kinds of issues which really do speak very deeply to Jewish history and to the kind of consciousness. And so I, not to make a plug for a particular organization, but Hias, which was founded in the late 19th century as the Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society, has reinvented itself and said, look, there are no longer Jewish refugees, but we're staying in business because we believe in the rights of refugees. And we want to do for refugees now and for people coming in what in the late 19th century and early 20th century, really into the 1930s and 40s, we did for our own. You know, never again. We can't sit back and allow the government in our names to treat people this way.
Hasia Diner is a professor of American Jewish history at NYU. Hasia, thanks so much.
It's been my pleasure.
Hi, my name is Carol. I'm calling from DuPont, Washington. Trump's statement only illustrates more deeply his racism, and he is using this to attack both the Democrats and Jews.
Hi, my name's Josh from Rochester Hills, Michigan. I think President Trump is 100% right, and as an American Jew, I've been saying the same thing for two decades.
This is Audria Hollander in Portland, Oregon. Trump will forever be Trump. This is another of his political moves to shame Jews not to vote for Democrats in 2020.
My name is Paul from Tampa, Florida. I find those comments to be very offensive. As a Jewish person myself, I don't like to be told how to vote. I like to pick my own party and to pick my own candidates. I feel that Mr. Trump is being very divisive as always. These remarks will not help anyone, especially those of the Jewish faith. And personally, there's absolutely no way I could vote in good conscience for the man now with these comments.
Aloha. My name is Michelle, and I'm calling you from Honolulu, Hawaii. And as usual, Trump speaks out of both sides of his mouth. I believe he is a white supremacist who plays Jews and Muslims against each other for his convenience. I'm a Jew and a lifelong Democrat. I do not owe loyalty to Trump. He forgets that our loyalty is to the Republic, not to the individual holding the office of the president.
Okay, people, time to get in touch with The Takeaway and Tanzina. Post on our Facebook page, call us at 877-8MYTAKE, or find us on Twitter. Tanzina is on Twitter as well. at Tanzina Vega. See you online.
NYC Now delivers the most up-to-date local news from WNYC and Gothamist every morning, midday, and evening. With three updates a day, listeners get breaking news, top headlines, and in-depth coverage from across New York City. By sponsoring programming like NYC Now, you'll reach our community of dedicated listeners with premium messaging and an uncluttered audio experience. Visit sponsorship.wnyc.org to get in touch and find out more.